Okay, I won't keep you too long. It's already 8. But you can keep healing, that's fine. No problem. Let's see. What I want to do is I want to hear you some of your comments, okay? I know what I did, or at least what I attempt to do. I know what I was trying to do. But I want to know what you picked up from what I did, you know, just by seeing it happening. What do you think I did differently? What do you think was good? What could be improved? That's also fine to say. What do you think is the method I use? Or I tried to use. I'm going to say I've tried to use. Okay, so I'm still learning. Okay?
It's called the dictionary method.
Pictionary? Okay, okay, yes. This right here? Okay, yes. Okay. What I do is I try to draw illustrations when I study with my contacts, and then I leave the paper with them, with the Bible verses. So when we go again and we do a following up study, they have the background, you know, they know what we've seen, and they understand it better when it's written like this. In a way, it helps them be visual. Okay? Pictionary, yes. Okay, that's correct. Anything else do you notice that I was trying to do?
Open-ended questions.
Okay, I used a lot of open-ended questions. In fact, most of them were open-ended. I tried to make an open-ended. Some of them were closed, like yes
or
no.
Made choices.
Yes.
Either or. So
either or.
Pick mm-hmm.
Okay.
One or the other.
Okay. Use questions. Use illustrations. Anything else? Miss Sandy.
No,
and
the pictures was good.
Good, thank you, yes.
You never said, that's wrong.
Okay, all right. Thank you for noticing that. Okay, Donna?
You asked for confirmation, asking if he believed.
Okay.
In steps.
You see, and that's something that the teacher is in control of. Okay, what we say, what we ask. They don't know that I'm throwing some commitment questions. That's the way I call them. Because I'm trying to draw pegs, you know, to a certain point, make sure he believes, he agrees, you know. We're on the scripture, okay? James, yes?
I thought that you used a little bit of both methods, because you did start from the beginning, but also you built a quality foundation.
Okay, all right. And let me explain. Jacob has some background in some of the previous lessons. I do this about maybe the third study in, maybe fourth, fifth study, depends on how fast they go. But this is not the very first lesson I teach them, okay? So, and there's more to this, okay? There's more verses that I go through when I do this, but this was enough to get the point across so far, okay? And then, you see, I'm keeping his interest. He's interested. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to build curiosity, all right? And then he said, I want to know more about the lesson. I want to finish it. And that's the point. You know, keep the curiosity high. If I try to answer everything in 1 hour, it's not going to have the curiosity. Okay? So this is just what I can do. Okay? Anything else? Yes?
I can't hear very good. When you asked him before you began if he thought we were still under the Ten Commandments, did he say yes or no?
He said yes.
That's what I thought.
Yes. And there's something that you need to know. this is the first time he went over this lesson. Okay, I tried to use it as an illustration, and you know, I feel confident with him that I can do this live and for your benefit. Okay, what I try to do is just through the courses I've taught on evangelism. You know, there are not very many; there's some of them, but people often ask, "We want to see you sit down and do a practice study. We want to see how you do it." So I keep that in mind and as for your benefit. Okay, and with all my flaws and mistakes, but I try to make it live, okay? And but anyways, yes, this is the first time he said yes, they're binding. Did you hear what he said at the end? He believed that we're not binding, okay? And we can, okay, but but anyways, that's what happened, all right? That's the purpose. Any other comments?
You let the scriptures convince.
Okay, yes. Yes, that's a good point you mentioned. As much as I try to stay away from my opinion. Okay, when I teach these courses, and I'm being gracious, you know, to you, but I'm more strict. I don't allow any explaining. when my students are doing Bible studies. In fact, all questions, okay? If you can help him understand by just asking questions, you're going to help him. You see, did you see him yawning once? Mm-hmm. Was he yawning? Was he distracted?
No.
Why? Because I wasn't lecturing him.
He was focused.
He was involved. He was the center of attention. Of course, I'm not the center of attention. He's the center of attention. And I'm going at his pace, at his rhythm. You know, sometimes I ask a question, and it takes time for the person to answer it. Okay? And they struggle. Well, that's okay. That's okay. They're the center of attention. Okay? It's not a matter of me just letting it out as quick as possible, and then so I can move on and go somewhere else. He's the center of attention. If he's struggling, I let him struggle a little bit. It's when my son, he's learning to tie his shoelaces. Well, if I tie his shoelaces for him every time, he's not going to learn to tie his shoelaces. But you know, he's beginning to tie his shoelaces, he struggles. And it's so tempting for me to say, okay, get your hands out of the way, let me do it for you. Let him struggle. It's okay for them to struggle. They're not going to die. It's normal. But they're going to grow. So same thing happens when we're doing a Bible study. We let them, when they're looking for an answer, it's okay to let them struggle a little bit. It's fine, no problem. Once they get it, they say, aha, got it. They're never going to forget it because they struggle a little bit. Okay, that's normal. So this method, I call it the self-discovery method, okay? Because my purpose is to help them self-discover the Bible. You see, he cannot tell me at the end of the study that it is my opinion because I never studied my opinion. Never one time. Okay, I might have made some remarks here about the pictures, the law of Moses, which were statements that I came up with, but everything he comes up with. Okay, he gives me the answers. Okay? So, now, in a real-life study, am I flexible? Do I do some explanations? Yes, I do, of course. Sometimes it's needful. But I try to do it the least amount possible. Okay? All I try to do is questions. Let him think. Keep him engaged. He's not going to go to sleep. He's going to feel part of the study. Okay? And it's one-on-one. Sometimes I do when there's couples, you know, husband and wife, and that's okay. But that's as much as I would prefer to do, just two, and only there are a couple. If they're friends, I try to say, well, I'll see you 1 hour, I'll see you the next hour. It's better to be one-on-one. Mm-hmm. You see, to give that personal attention, you keep them focused, and you keep them on the scriptures. Okay? So I don't know what any other comment that you wanted to make. Yes?
I wrote down a few. I was doing a few things at a time, so if they're not going to be in the book. You begin the class by stating, you know, how you met. Forgive me, the gentleman's name again.
Jacob.
You met him at Chick-fil-A, and you said that during the middle of that conversation. And then you went directly into the Bible study. And wrong or right, that's not the issue. What I had a question about was if you were to fully go through that illustration and say, okay, you had that conversation, would you have that type of conversation in mind while you were at Chick-fil-A? Because what I was getting was that you were going to have a discussion about how you talk to a person while at Chick-fil-A and how that happened. And what you showed us was what you would have at a Bible study in a private setting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's my purpose.
Right, that's fine. That's mm-hmm. fine. You know, that's what you intended to do. The illustration at the beginning threw me off a little bit because I thought you were going to display how you would have had that type of conversation in that setting. Mm-hmm. And that's not the type of conversation that you illustrated for us or showed us.
Okay, no,
so
it is.
If you could take a few minutes, you know, not now because I have a few more questions, but to try to have that conversation in that setting, because that's a different setting entirely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you met him, and you said how are you doing? I mean, you didn't barge in. Well, what's your thoughts on the law of Moses and, you know, whether we're under it or not?
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's not something that you carry on your hip because you're going to use it in the midst
yes.
of an introductory conversation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And what a person generally needs when they're having a discussion about evangelism is how to have those type of tools that break the ice, if you will, so that you can have conversations about whatever issue that that you can bring around to a religious matter or whatever discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated the illustration, but that was a Bible study that you would have with somebody one-on-one, not a conversation that you would have within the public.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everybody that you reinforced your questions and your answers were positive. You said yes. Uh-huh. That was always positive, and I think that's something that I need to do a better job at, because my brain tends to go boom, 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 and I'm always thinking about the next step before I stop to really say that I appreciate that person and, you know, the conversational words that they use in order to understand that. The illustrations, the pictures, excellent. Seriously, because what you say and how you illustrate that makes a longer impression on the person, because they're not always going to remember every single word, but they'll remember the bits and pieces that they connected to that picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was positive. The only thing that I saw towards the middle of the very beginning was that you didn't have the picture or the illustration down pat in your own mind how you were going to write it. So that break would have caused the student to, you know, to have to pause and, you know, reshuffle that in their mind, because you got to remember every second of every day your brain is taking a picture. It has just shutter. Mm-hmm. And it's taking picture. And so when you're having a conversation with words, they're putting that word with that picture that you're drawing. And so you have to. So anyway, it was just an observation.
No, thank you. That's a good comment.
Then your questions were very ordered in the sense that you knew exactly where you wanted to go. And I want to shift. That's a positive. I want to shift to bring in the negative, because you brought in a statement a while ago that you said you never stated an opinion. Well, that's not entirely true. Your opinion is that you never did lead the discussion. You are the leader of the discussion by the very fact that you're asking the questions, you're engaging in the conversation. So to say that you weren't doing that, it might be something humbling to say in your own mind, but you have to remember that being a part of a conversation where you know or you believe you know more about the Bible and trying to help someone, it comes from a higher, however you want to say that, a mindset that says that person knows more. Okay, so it has nothing to do, it's a way that you keep in your own mind that you're humble before God. Alright, so that has nothing to do, but I think we have to remember that, yes, we're leading a discussion, we're having a discussion, and that gives us confidence that we should have when we're promoting something that's positive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were doing. I thought there was a negative. You work around the issue and not starting from the point. And I want to go back to the very beginning where I talked about the difference between a Bible study at home or, if you're having that conversation at Chick-fil-A or whatever. The point is that there's a difference in time. You have to be thinking about a time frame. When you have a Bible study, you know you're going to sit down with somebody for an hour and have undivided attention, except for the fact that they have kids and then, it's all chaos. But anyway, but one of the things that I wanted to bring out is something that I've been trying to work in my own head, and I'd like your thoughts on it, if you would. But I think there's three factors that go into every conversation, every issue that we ever face. And the three things are time, duration, and frequency. And those are mitigated by oneself, others, and objects. So my time, or a person's time, is important, has a value, a place value to oneself. Duration has a value or a time placement or whatever to others. And frequency has to do with the object that you're in discussion about, excuse me. So the time, duration, and frequency all are factors that influence a person while they're having a Bible study or conversation. So if you're at Chick-fil-A, the time is not going to be always the same. The duration is going to be dependent upon the two persons' interest, and the frequency is going to be in relationship to the value of that conversation in regards to what you're actually discussing. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, Other than those things, very small photos.
Well, thank you for those comments, Kevin. Appreciate it. Thank you. Yes, on the first point of the conversation, on the first two sessions we had, I tried to attempt to teach them some tools how to have a conversation where you can raise interest in the person that will lead into Bible study. Those were the two first classes. You probably weren't here, but I tried to do that then. I don't mean to have covered completely or to be the final authority on it, but I tried to give some tools, and so I'm glad you mentioned that. And thank you for those comments. I wanted to say, on the illustrations you mentioned, I'm probably hesitated a little, took time to. This is, this is a different environment than when I'm used to doing it. We're sitting down, and I'm not nervous when I'm sitting with him alone. Well, I am a little, the numbers stand, but I'm more nervous now. See, I'm here. I don't have an outline of my questions. I'm doing an outline. Usually, I do my questions on the fly. See, just very logical questions from the text. I don't need an outline. But I have every question written down. I make sure I have every question, but I didn't want to be so nervous that I would miss something. So I'm just reading it, okay, like a script. And I told him beforehand, I said, I'm going to have to read the questions. I don't want to forget anything because I'm on the spot. I'm in front of everybody. So I don't use this cheat sheet, of course. I use more of the fisherman material. And let me tell you something. When we talk about the material, I use the fisherman material, but material is something, and method is another thing. What you saw me doing was a method. I wasn't using anyone's material. I was using a chain of Bible verses, okay? But the method is to let him self-discover it, okay? Let him think about it and see it for themselves in the scriptures and answer it. Let me tell you something. I have done campaigns before, and we sit down, and we do a Bible study on conversion, okay? And this is, of course, I'm sure it has happened to some of you. And then I go to with a lady or with a gentleman and say, can you read Mark 16 and 16? What do you need to do to be saved? Almost every time they're going to answer, you have to accept the Lord. And I'm like, what is going on here? Haven't you just read it? People do not understand what they read. That's a fact. Okay? That's a fact. If you're asking someone, repent and be baptized, and then I ask her right away, right after she read, what do you need to do to be saved? And she said, you need to accept Christ. And I said, there's something wrong here. She's not understanding what she's reading. Now, in this method, I'm helping my student understand what he's reading. Because he's the one giving me the answers. I'm not giving him the answers. Okay, now, this is going to build in him confidence. But we're going to get to the point that I'm going to have to ask less questions. Because he's understanding everything he's reading. See, this is a self-discovery method where I'm helping build confidence on himself, understand what he's reading, to the point that he can go home later when we finish the chain of study, he's been baptized and everything, and he's confident to read the Bible and understand what he's reading. Okay? No one is going to ask him a question that he's going to give something else for an answer that is not in the scripture. That's one of the purposes of the method. Okay? Now, material, you can use any material with this method. You can use your own chain version, you can use the safety chain, you can use anything using this type of method as opposed to lecturing. Okay? That's another method. Okay? I'm just comparing the two methods. In my experience, self-discovery will be more effective than just lecturing, because you are building him confidence, you're helping him understand, and he's going to accept not what I say, but he's going to accept what the scriptures are telling him. Okay? This is the purpose of this method. Okay? Now, material is that's different material. Okay? Of course, there's different methods as well, but this is the method I wanted to convey to you. Okay? To see if you get some points, some ideas. See, and I'm just doing what I can to convey that method. All right? Okay, Mikey? Yes? All right. I'm just trying to see. I don't want to forget anything on this.
Okay, I can ask you.
Yes, please.
So how did, I love Ted's point a minute ago.
Okay.
How did you get to the point of getting him to four cities?
That's an absolutely good question.
That would help us. Maybe we're at Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
that we get to go to Chick-fil-A
okay.
and eat a sandwich or something like that.
Yes.
Then we might say something to somebody there.
Yes. Okay.
So how did you do that?
That's a good question. And it varies, of course. Okay, there's family members, there's friends that you already know, have confidence with, and you say, hey, how about we have a Bible study? And they're gonna say usually yes, because you know them, you're familiar with them. I know I can ask my sister or some cousins, hey, why don't we sit down and have a Bible study? Just straight to the point. Okay, that's one way. Now, if it's a stranger, usually when we knock doors, and a stranger comes out of the door, okay, this is what I usually do. I take some pointers from the Fisherman course. You know, they have a method to develop interest. So what I do when I knock a door and a person comes out of the street, well, I introduce myself, say, hey, good morning, I'm Raphael. I'm a Christian, a member of the Church of Christ in the United Main. Maybe I'm inviting them for a gospel meeting or a BBS. I'll give them an invitation. And then just casually, I ask it, I would like to know your opinion about some matters. And they say, okay. They say, or I can say, can I ask you some questions? And they usually would say, okay, let's see. Okay, I say, which question is more interesting to you? Would there be a day of judgment? Or is Jesus God? Which question is more interesting to you? And then just let her choose a question. And they say, well, I think I say either, will there be a judgment or is everybody going to heaven? What do you think about that? And then say, well, I kind of like the first question. I say, okay, that's a good choice. Why? Why do you choose that question? Well, because I think the day of judgment is something that terrifies me. Or just maybe something that I don't know anything about. Or it's something that I wish I knew more about. I say, why? Why would you like to know more about that day of judgment? What? And then I say, well, because, you know, I hear these preachers on TV that the day of judgment is just going to be so horrible and so on, and just kind of want to know what the Bible says. What do you think the Bible says? You see, I just keep on asking her questions, you know. Sometimes I just tell them, okay, can I ask you a question? I say, yes. I say, why do you think there's so many religions nowadays? I just throw it like that. And just listen. And some say, well, I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding of the Bible. And then I ask another question, say, why do you think there's so much misunderstanding of the Bible? I say, well, there's so many teachers, evangelists, televangelists, and one says one thing, one says another thing. And then I ask another question. How can you know which one is the truth? How can you know? How can you tell the difference between a good teacher or a good preacher or a bad preacher? Or a biblical preacher or a non-biblical preacher? And then I just let him state their opinion. See? And then that's how I do with strangers. And then, before they know it, I throw a last question just to close it because I won't stay there for an hour. It's just this conversation is maybe between 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. See, I won't stay there for too long. And I throw the question. And I say, would you like to know what the Bible says about these questions? Would you like to know? And sometimes I'm honest. I say, you know, well, I'm honest, but I say I give more details, rather. I am honest. I try to be honest, but that's it. I give more details. I say, you know, I have a series of lessons where we study the Bible from lesson one, lesson two. How about, I would like to see if you're interested in maybe sitting down and we're going to answer some of these questions. Yeah. And just do it naturally. You see, it doesn't look awkward, doesn't look pushy, doesn't look, you know, see what I'm saying? Yeah. It just flows. See, James, just flows. So I just throw the question, and then I listen. That's what I gave you the 10 tips at the first lesson. So just throw an open question and listen to what they say. And if we pay attention to what they say, we're going to see some remarks, important remarks, and then we ask them another question about those remarks. And then they're going to keep on talking. See, people at the doors, they're used to, you know, someone comes and starts just regurgitating something and then starts opening the Bible and starts, you know, they're watching TV and say, why is this man coming and opening up the scriptures and, see what I'm saying, and telling me his opinion? See, we know it's not an opinion, but maybe that's sometimes what people think. But if we ask him questions, people feel more comfortable, less intimidating, more, you know, more in a friendly way, and they say, okay, yeah, let me give you my opinion. This is what I think. Everybody has an opinion. I mean, if we ask them for politics, they're going to give you their opinion. We ask them for football or basketball, they're going to give you their opinion. Now we ask them for religion, they're going to give you their opinion as well. That way there's so many religions. So that's usually what I do. And let me tell you a story. There was this student at Monterey, and he's a preacher, minister. And then he was a student of the Fishers of Men course. And I'm using Fishers of Men as an example. I'm trying not to teach Fishers of Men. Okay, this is more of my own conclusions, but I give credit to Fishers of Men. A lot of this comes from it, plus some things that I add. But I'm not trying to, you know, sell you the method. I'm trying to do something original for you, okay? And please never tell Brother Barry Hatcher what I'm doing. Please. He will never speak to me, all right? He might, but, I know. And when we do official Fishers of Men, or things are more strict, okay? More strict. Here I am just giving you, cutting you some slack. Okay, Michaela? All right, there's homework and so on. It's a lot of things. But anyways, I was saying, this preacher took the course, and he didn't think much about it. He said, no, it's not for me. This is not good. And a lot of work, and I already know it. So he just passed it, you know, barely passed it, and just to say he did it. But then later on he moves to another city, and then he has a door knocking campaign. And then the group of students go, and one of the guys in that group who went to that city where he now had moved, he was doing this examples I'm telling you. You know, he will knock doors and he will, you know, introduce himself just naturally and say, hey, we're having a gospel meeting tonight in such and such place. Here's the invitation. By the way, can I ask you a question? I would like to know your opinion. Why do you think there's so many religions nowadays? And that will get people started. You know, people started, oh yeah, this is why. This is why I think, you know, so many lies, so much misunderstanding, false Bibles, whatever, you know. And we keep on asking questions. We keep the ball rolling. See, I'm not telling my opinion. And people they don't know, but they're getting, their interest is going up, because all of these questions, they're giving their opinion, they're going to get to the point where they say, well, I want to know what the Bible answers. See? So this guy was knocking, the door knocking with this other guy who, you know, took the course, this other preacher. Both are preachers, but the other one, you know, he took the course, he didn't care for it. But the other one took it and he, you know, he tried to get the most of it. So he was door knocking, the other guy was just listening. And he was setting up Bible study after Bible study appointment after appointment. And he said, what did you learn all that? He said, didn't you take the Fishers of Men course? I said, yes, I did. But is that what you got it from? He said, yes. He said, I want to take it again. That was that was what he said. Okay? And I'm using the method as an example. Okay, again. So he was convinced. And he took it again. In fact, he asked Brother Barry to fly to Guadalajara, and in fact, Brother Barry was staying in Monterey, and he would fly once a week to Guadalajara, about maybe an hour, 15 minutes flight every week, just to go teach there. And when those guys finally finished the course, you know, the second time around, he said, no, I want to learn it this time. And now their congregation is growing, setting Bible studies. And the thing that I like a lot about it is that just regular members can do it. See, the main message is we cannot put this responsibility only on the preacher, okay, or only in a handful of persons. Mikey can do it. Anybody can do it. See what I'm saying? Sister Sandy can do it. We just give him some tools where all the members can do it. Imagine in a congregation of 10 members, each one of them having one Bible study, each one. That's very positive. Okay, as opposed to only the preacher having maybe one or two. Okay, that's a good number. So that changed their mindset. You know, only this example of how they door knocked and talk to strangers. And, you know, they have. Of course, I don't see them, but I hear that they post picture after picture of how the church is growing on Facebook and baptism and so on. But anyways, that's an example that happened with them. I just wanted to just give you an example, and I'll see what I'm saying. But yes,
you mentioned tools that you try to give to the Bible students. I want to ask you your opinion of what do you think a person needs when they begin teaching another person the Bible, and why do you think those tools are important? Because a lot of people, you know, you when you passed around the pamphlets, every person there had a different method. You yourself also mentioned that, you know, you didn't go off of the notes anymore. You are reading enough to be able to, you know, formulate the questions yourself in regards to whatever subject you were talking about. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think as far as tools that you're trying to teach another person is important, and what order do you place them in and why?
For a person when I'm studying with someone?
Yeah, what do you think a person needs to know? I mean, you know, as far as the subject is concerned, as far as tools are concerned, I mean, okay. How do you want to work that?
Well, the person I'm studying with, they don't need to know anything but just stay in the Bible and read the verses and just make some notes and answer the questions.
So you go willy-nilly through whatever subject that...
Okay, no, and that goes back to my previous class. There's a systematic method, there's a system, okay? Right. So we begin with the existence of God, inspiration of the Bible, deity of Christ, and then we move to the covenants, and then we move to sin, you know, repentance, and then baptism, and so on. There's a system. This is more or less in general the way we go through.
Okay, but that doesn't work with everybody. You let's say, for instance, you just met a Baptist, and now that person has a different understanding of
correct
some of those issues, but some of those are similar.
Correct. Yes.
Not the issue. The issue is you're teaching us tools, not methods, go to this verse and go to this verse and go to this verse. You're teaching us how to's. You're trying to give us tools about how to engage, how to do all those different things in order to bring that person about for a Bible study or for a conversation or whatever. And you're also at the same time implementing, you're teaching those things to them subjectively. That is, through the methods that you use, you're teaching them how to do that same thing again. You're imprinting. Imprinting,
yes,
is the process by which you go. That person understands what you know. It's the same thing as a parent to a child. A parent imprints who they are, their characteristics, onto that child. So I say this all the time. I think like my dad, and I have the emotions of my mother. I don't have a problem saying that. You know, at 35, you know, I know that, you know, if I'm a little hungry, I'm going to be a little bit more emotional. That's the way my mom is. That's the way I am. You know, it's neither here nor there. That's what I'm saying. You're imprinting. What are you trying to imprint on that person outside of knowledge? Because they can read a book and get out of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what you're trying to do with a Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a part of it, but that's not the reason why you're trying to do that. You're trying to make a connection.
Uh-huh.
And that connection has to last not only through that Bible study, but throughout the remainder of their life, because you want them ultimately to go to heaven. That's where you want
okay,
to see
yes,
them.
Yes. Well, there's several things that go through at the same time when I'm doing about several things, yes. That's a good point.
I was going to say, April the 30th, you're dealing with how to help students develop godly sorrows.
Okay, yes.
And so the goal is... to be able to get them to that point, to encourage them
yes.
to that point.
Yes, that's the main goal, correct? But at the time, before we get to that point, to the God disorder, we're trying to build a foundation.
Get them to think.
Yes, there's several things going on. One of them, let's say the person already believes in the existence of God. Well, we're going to do the lesson anyways, because it's going to, not everybody, even though you believe in God, not everybody can confirm from the scriptures or find ways to say, I can show you how to prove it from the Bible. Not everybody can do it. So people appreciate that we go through that lesson. Now, at the same time, they are learning how the method goes. You know, they're going to get to the second lesson, things that they don't know, or probably they're not as confident as the existence of God. And by the second lesson, they already know how the method flows. You know, they're beginning to understand what they're reading. They're beginning to understand that when they answer the wrong question, if I'm quiet or if I say, okay, read it again, they now understand how it works. Okay, I answered it wrong. Okay? So several things going on. And then I'm drawing pegs. As I move on, I'm going to ask him, do you believe that Jesus is God? Based on what we just read, but what would you answer? And he's going to say yes. So I'm going to be deity of Jesus. Okay, he committed to it. He said yes. Okay, now, the Ten Commandments or do you believe that? Yes. Okay, we're moving along. We're making progress. See, I'm trying to mark fundamental doctrinal principles that they need before they are baptized. Okay, that's what I'm trying. We're not going to cover everything before they go to the top of baptism, but we're just building a foundation, and I'm just checking on the squares, things that they say, yeah, I believe that, yeah, I accept that, yeah, I say, we're no longer under the law of Moses, yes, I believe it, do you believe it, yes, okay, I check it. So there's several things going on at the same time, okay, for that matter. And then something I wanted to mention, there's so many ways we can explain this, okay. This is one way, okay? We can use some other verses. If you notice, I used only a handful of verses, and of course this is not the whole lesson for the covenant, okay, that I use. But my point is not to jump here and there, here and there, here and there, here and there, but to get just a handful of verses that he will understand and spend enough time in this handful of verses so that they can say with confidence, yeah, I believe that I'm a Gentile, and believe that I'm under the law of Christ and not under the law of Moses. Okay? That's just a handful of verses. I don't have to do so very many or just bombard them with verses here and there. Okay? Just make sure it's a few verses, enough to cover the subject. Okay? But they can understand them. All right? That's one of my purposes. Okay? That I try to do. All right? Any other comment? Mike?
You know, I think of some ways that the Bible actually gives us principles.
Okay.
One that I was thinking about was in Mark chapter 9, when Jesus and his disciples came down from the Mount of Transfiguration. And in verse number 16, Jesus asked the scribes a question. And he said, what are you asking them? What are you questioning with them? And this question actually stirred up some other questions. And it's interesting that a good way to evangelize is to ask questions, like you've been saying. But here, it was in a public setting. A lot of times we're afraid to do that. We're afraid to ask questions in a public setting. But it's beneficial. Mm-hmm. It also depends on your confidence.
Yes.
We see also another good way of approaching evangelism is when people are going through problems. Well, again, in Mark chapter 9, this man had a son whose evil spirit was throwing him into the water and into the fire. Well, he approached him. What do you want me to do? What's going on with this situation? Well, if we're meeting people where we're supposed to meet them, there's opportunities all around us, you know, and we haven't even opened up the Bible yet. So there's different ways. Another thing that I thought about was Acts 19. You remember when Paul asked those disciples of John, he said, have you received the Spirit since you believed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, good question. Well, that takes confidence today. Well, if someone is a member of a denominational church, it takes confidence for us to ask them those type of questions. When were you baptized and what was you baptized for? You know, those are some tools right there that we can find in the Bible. The book of Acts is all about evangelism and getting points across that we can ask questions, meet people where they are, put them in a position where they'll ask us, what must I do?
Okay, and that's a good point, Mike. If you ask them, a denominational person, why was the purpose of your baptism? Okay, but we stay away from giving them our answer, you know. That's going to create in them curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Say, well, have I done it for the right purpose? Was that okay? I would like to be more sure. And then that's when you tell them, okay, let's sit down and have a Bible study, and then we'll go through it.
Yeah, we'll say Tuesday at 7 o'clock, see you at your house.
Absolutely. That's it. Because the best place for us nowadays, and my purpose is, of course, we have the examples in the book of Acts. We know, nowadays, you know, the society might be a little bit different, but my purpose is try to sit down at the house table and just, you know, one-on-one or two-on-one, and then just quietly study the scriptures. That's the purpose. Not so much standing on the street, try to, you know, debate a point or answer every question they ask us on the street. But if we can manage it to our advantage and say, okay, that's a good question. And if he asks you, was my baptism correct? I would say, what do you think? I would like to know what you think first. And then people just get going. See, we try to avoid as much as possible, you know, do a debate at the door or at the street, or answer every question at the street. See what I'm saying? Or start opening the Bible on the street, right to this topic, when they don't have a foundation yet. Okay, we need to start from A, B, C, and then we get to this point. Or maybe they want to start on the miracles. It's way over there. See what I'm saying? So let's wait. Let's wait. Let's use that interest to our advantage. If someone wants to know about the miracles, that's even better, because we have a long way to go. Notice all the foundation you're going to build before you get to their answer. So let's just be smart about it and don't try to, you know, please everybody. And like Brother, you know, Rob Whitaker, last week I was listening to one of his first lessons on evangelism. He said, I used to chase rabbits all the time with people. You know, I don't chase rabbits anymore. I sit down and start from the beginning. Okay, even though if they have questions, I hold on as much as it's so hard for me because I'm a preacher, and that's what I've done all my life. Answer questions right away. I wait because I've seen the benefit of waiting and just guiding them through, you know, steps that they can understand and handle. See what I'm saying? They're not going to understand them perfectly, but by the time someone is on the water, I want to make sure she or he knows why they're there for. Okay, don't have any doubts. And they know exactly what they're doing and exactly what's going to happen when they're baptized. Okay, and they have this foundation. And that's my goal. Right, yes.
And also, you think of Acts chapter 8, and you find Philip, and we know that this was miraculous in one sense, but he met the Ethiopian treasurer where he was.
Okay, yes.
One thing that we cannot do is miss our opportunity.
Yes.
So if someone has that background already, we have to have enough wisdom based upon what we've studied, our prayer life and all that, that, okay, we ask them certain questions, they answer those questions, seem like they have a real good understanding. Well, what's hindering you from being baptized?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I've been thinking about that. So, again, when we consider evangelism, it is focused on the individual, not the teacher. So as the teacher, we need to make sure that we're not trying to take them through 10 lessons if they only need one. But we don't want them to just have one lesson if they need 10.
Right.
So it all depends on the wisdom, and God gives us that wisdom in the scriptures. So every situation is different. That's why everybody, even though we're commanded to do evangelism, everybody can't do evangelism. But there's some people that shouldn't even talk to nobody until they get... I'm not laughing. I'm being very serious. They shouldn't even talk to nobody about the scriptures until they get themselves right with
us.
Yes. And know what evangelism is. And what we're trying to do is trying to grow the fear of the Lord in their life so they can have reverence toward God and not irreverence toward God.
Absolutely. Mike, I agree 100% with what you say. Let me just add to what you said. Okay, I'm going to add. You know, we go to the... You're talking about the background people have. We have a topic of deity sometime before this that not even members of the church know about.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Deity is so misunderstood. Yeah. I met a group of brothers that were having a discussion. Raphael, can you help us understand deity? Some say it's three gods, some say it's... We don't understand. And say, well, how long have you been Christians? Oh, for years. And this topic has just not been settled. See what I'm saying? So, talking about that background, if some members of the church don't even have that background, imagine denominational people. They don't even, might not know. So, background varies, Mike, and I agree with you. It varies. We can start with someone further down, but they're not going to hurt if we start in the back.
Right.
It's not going to hurt them. It's going to benefit everybody. Okay, even the members of the church. It's been members for years. Okay?
Sure. Mike sparked my brain. When we studied Deuteronomy in school, I always got a sense that Deuteronomy was specific to the three motivating factors: fear, love, and duty. And for years I used to think that fear, love, and duty were three tools used as motivating factors. The only problem is, one of my thoughts as I thought through that equation was fear and love are two sides of one equation, and they equal a person's duty. That is what a person is more or less bound to. And that fear and love is in our culture, that is in every part of American society, is not where it needs to be. Because of the fact that what we see, fear and love motivates us so that when we understand what duty is, it compels us. And so I think that Mike is right that the first step is to understand the fear of the Lord, and you develop that love. But that is not the That is not the composite of the equation. The composite of the equation is how does fear and love both work together in order to motivate one towards duty. And if you look at previous generations, the 40s, 50s, those that went through World War II, they didn't have to be moved, or in fact, you don't even have what's called propaganda during that time and age. The reason why was because people didn't need it. People didn't need propaganda in order to move. They didn't need propaganda in order to teach. Propaganda came about after World War II when we stole it from the communists.
Mm-hmm.
And from Hitler and from all those other people, and it was brought back and used in marketing campaigns for years and years. And now we just think it puts a lot of time. So fear, love, and duty are motivating factors that most people consider. But the true equation is how does fear and love mold together in order to make the perfect bond of duty.
So thank you, Ken. I'm going to say, Donna, you have any last comments? You're going to be the last one.
Oh,
you want to make some comments?
Yeah.
She can have my comments.
Okay, I'll say, if you had comments, we'll let you. If you don't have comments, except Mikey wants to say something.
I heard a while ago, but
okay.
It's not relevant anymore.
Okay. You happy Manchester City, the champions of the... Okay. I'm going to let you go, if that's fine. Unless there's a complaint. But okay.
I mean, I wanted to make a comment.
Yes, please.
I wanted to go back to what you started when your first class, when you were saying that this is not the only method. This is just the method that you're teaching and that you're sharing in your classes. So we as students have to assess this method and see if the method can be applied to what we do when we encounter people, especially when sharing the gospel. And so I appreciate that. And I think we also need, as the students of this class, need to look at ourselves and even ask ourselves that question. Should we be a teacher in this situation and in this manner? Because like what Mike was saying, not everybody should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a good thought-provoking class, to the point that we have to ask ourselves, can we do this naturally? Can we do this to the point that it will bring about a change in a person's life, a person's salvation? And we need to make sure that we're prepared and study for that, because we're dealing with people's souls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a game. And I, being one that has lost a soul because of my emotion, being angry and being upset that their answers and responses aren't right for what I believe and what I think. So we have to take a good look, and I appreciate this method because it does challenge our own methods, and it does challenge us to reevaluate our goal in winning the soul.
Thank you, sister. Appreciate that. Let me finish with this. I'm going to ask Brother Mike Ferguson if you can close in a moment with a prayer. But I used to study the Bible with people, and I will be inside myself, like you mentioned, so upset, so angry. Focusing on not losing the tone of my voice, not raising it, not pushing. Because I say, can't you see it? It's right here. Let me read it again to you. Okay, listen. This is what it says. And I'm so upset. And so trying to win that point, trying to convince him right then and there. And I'm upset inside. But did you see how I studied with Jacob? None of them were upset. I wasn't upset. He wasn't upset. We weren't arguing. We weren't having a debate. It was just a discovery of the scripture. I was guiding him. And he's the one who's giving me the answers. If he's going to debate, he's going to debate with himself, or he's going to debate what he's reading. But he's not going to debate with me. We're not going to be upset, and we're going to be being friends. See what I'm saying? As opposed to getting upset with someone because I just couldn't convince him. See what I'm saying? Because I was trying to do it another way. See what I'm saying? I hope you can see the general difference of this method I'm trying to show you these days. But anyways, I'm glad for your attendance. Thank you so much for supporting this class. Randy keeps saying that there's good comments. I don't know who's telling them those are good comments. I don't know where they're coming from.
I will add a comment here.
Okay.
I will say that for me, getting started, it was easier to do it with people that I worked with over the phone, people in other states, just bringing up conversations. So if you're somebody who's uncomfortable talking with people face-to-face, there are many opportunities where you can talk to somebody over the phone.
Yes, that's
true.
And
start a conversation. So, and then build up. I mean, just knowing your own personality, you know, there are ways to do that where you don't have to be so upfront right away.
Correct. Good point. Thank you. I'm glad for all your comments. Thank you.